Hello and welcome to The Night Shift, where we talk about all things Stephen King. I'm Craig Hildebrand Burke.
And I'm Mark Harding.
And we are going to tonight talk about the Dark Tower film adaptation. We were initially going to talk about the potentially looking at another Stephen King filmed adaptation, just as a revisiting some old version of one of his stories, but there's been a lot of news in the last week.
Wait, are you telling me that I sat through 3 hours of it for nothing?
It's not for nothing. It's all, you know, you're telling me you didn't enjoy it?
Yeah, I'll save that for the next
podcast. All right, we'll get to that. Anyway, we're going to look at the 1991 miniseries of It next time round. We're going to save that. So sorry for everyone who was really hanging out for that.
Oh, my memory's really bad these days as well. That means I'm going to have to watch it again.
That's not a bad thing. Maybe. Anyway, there has been a lot of news. So we are going to talk about the Dark Tower stuff because it really does, I think, warrant discussing before it becomes old. And I think we're only going to continue to get more news. So we might as well jump onto this whilst we can. Yes, so
I agree. It's very exciting.
It is. And actually, it is really exciting, mainly because I suddenly remembered something today, which was that you had written a piece a few years ago.
So sophisticated. You called it a piece.
but it did get posted up on Tor, I think, from memory.
Yes, it did. Yeah. My finest hour.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Now, not so much, considering it was why we're not going to get a Dark Tower at that point.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
It was okay. It was all right. You put probably in the title, so that I think escapes you from being definite that we weren't going to get one.
I'm so glad I didn't make a bet.
I think all the reasons you listed are reasons why I guess it's taken so long anyway. So it's not surprising.
And I think we might come to a point in this discussion today where you could argue that we're not getting one.
Well, actually, I was going to kind of kick off with that.
Oh, good. Excellent. Let's do it.
All right. Well.
Spoiler alert. Hashtag spoiler alert.
Yeah. Well, I guess the first thing is we'd already decided we were going to record all of this earlier in the week because I had some theories about what they were going to do with the adaptation based on just little things I'd seen around the place and on their casting as well. And then I got completely scooped by Stephen King, who put a thing up on his Twitter account, which just ruined the fact that this is what I was expecting to happen anyway. So believe me when I say I had this prediction before it actually was verified. But he put up a photo of, I'm assuming it's a picture from the set of the Horn of Eld. And it had a caption over it. I'm trying to remember the wording now. Can you recall exactly?
I've got Twitter open.
Last time around. So,
yes.
Which, well, do you want to explain, I guess, the significance of that?
Okay, so big spoiler alert for anybody who is reading the Dark Tower series and hasn't reached the end of book 7. But the end of book 7, Roland makes it to the Dark Tower. He gets to the top. He suddenly discovers that everything he's done has been wrong, and he needed to have the Horn of Eld with him in order to complete the story correctly. And he's sent right back to the very beginning in the desert, chasing the man in black. But this time he has the horn. Mm. And the final line, if I'm not mistaken, is the same as the first line. The gunslinger, the man in black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed. So, theory is that because he has the Horn of Eld in the film adaptation, the film is actually set after the end of book 7. So they can do everything differently and they don't have to kind of slavishly follow word for word what happens in the novels, which is a very J.J. Abrams way to approach things.
you're still burnt about Star Trek, aren't you?
I'm burnt about everything. But he basically wiped out Captain Picard. It's not cool.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're not kind of bound to the novels. And from my perspective, I kind of felt that that was a bad thing because I love the novels so much. And even reading them back in the day, I was thinking what amazing films that they could potentially make if anybody ever had the budget and the scope and the ambition to do it. So it is kind of a little bit disappointing that we aren't going to be getting a great adaptation of The Gunslinger as film one. But it gives them a lot of creative license to do some different things. And as I've always said, one thing with an adaptation is that you capture the spirit of the book rather than the text.
Mm.
So if they're able to do that and do things a little bit differently, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I think I can understand exactly why this has happened. I think if you're sitting there thinking, hey, we're going to adapt the Dark Tower series, how's that going to work on screen? And then you think, okay, there's that ending. And the ending, I love the ending. I think some people really hate the ending.
Yeah, there was a lot for it, I remember, at the time.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people just kind of misread it as a whole sort of it was all a dream type ending, which it's not. But I think it's in keeping with the fact that this is, you know, a series about stories and about storytelling. And, you know, basically the ending is the stories continue, you know, and they will continue. The whole fear of the series was that the stories are going to end, that the Dark Tower will fall and that's the end of all stories. And he gets to the tower and they continue on, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, and the whole idea that there are only a handful of stories that just keep getting retold through history really resonates with that kind of ending.
Yeah. So I think, but that works so well in a book. But in a film, I think people would just riot. I think they would just think, well, that's just stupid. And, you know, they wouldn't stand for it. You know, I think audiences have a different relationship with the film to how they would with the book. And I think they would just think that everything they've just seen, if they get three or five or however many films, has just been a waste of time and that there's been no point to it. So my feeling was they had to have some kind of different ending, which then means they're going to be changing things along the way. That, you know, when Roland gets to the tower, it needs to have some kind of definitive conclusion to it, which the books don't have.
My prediction is that he'll get there. And then the final scene of the film will be him going, "My hat!" And then he goes back to the destiny.
Yeah, possibly.
No.
It's very Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
So working backwards from there is, well, we need to change things. And then they were always going to change things. And I think if anything was going to go, it was going to be a bulk of the Gunslinger anyway. So I basically did some sort of inductive reasoning and worked on what are the known knowns in terms of what do we already know as a fact about this film that they're making, and then how can we sort of get a gauge on what they're actually going to do with this. Because I think there's been a lot of ill feeling about all the announcements that have been coming out since they started filming. People have been very confused and really from initially wary to cynical to this is going to be a mess.
I have a feeling you're talking about me.
No, actually it's not particularly. I've been seeing, just reading a lot of what people's reactions are. And my feeling all along is you've got to trust the filmmakers. I really dislike this sort of, and again, I'm not talking about you. It's not all about you. But this sort of knee-jerk reaction people have to films that haven't actually come out yet. You know, we're seeing the worst example of that at the moment with the Ghostbusters.
Oh, my God.
It's like that is just the worst. But I think this sort of catastrophic, oh, my God, this film is going to be an absolute mess before anything has actually happened, before anybody knows anything, I think it's unfair on what the people are trying to do. And the truth is, you know, we don't really know. you know, we only know a handful of details, and that can be interpreted in any number of ways. People, I think, had the same feelings about The Lord of the Rings when that was first sort of kicking into gear with this production, with the casting and the rumors from set and so on. Everyone just thought this was going to be a complete shambles.
Sure.
And all of their, once you saw into a context what all of those little set photos or rumors had been, it all suddenly made sense.
But yeah, people
couldn't
yeah.
see the world of the story that the director had envisaged. We just couldn't see how these kind of things were all going to fit together.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's unfortunate that it's happening in the context of a world unlike Lord of the Rings, where the internet is a thing and social media is such a thing.
Yeah.
Because these are stories that people care about, as with Lord of the Rings and as with Dark Tower, you know, for both of us, it's very close to our hearts. And the little pieces of information that were released up to kind of recently didn't paint a picture of that resonated with the series that we know and love.
Mm.
And that was a little bit worrying. But then in the age of social media and hot takes and the internet needing to have a definitive opinion on something, as soon as you hear anything, everybody has to deride it as terrible straight away.
Yeah.
As you say, without giving it time and trusting that the filmmakers know what they're doing. Yeah.
So I think, you know, if we actually look at what the facts are rather than what our interpretations are, there's actually some really kind of positive things.
Actually, just to interrupt you one final time, and I promise I won't do it anymore.
That's all right.
But just before we kind of dive into the story and the filmmaking and all that kind of stuff, they did release photos of Idris Elba dressed as Roland.
Yeah.
I think we should address that, because it's kind of superficial first
and then move into
what did you think? Away. What's your hot take? Great.
Well, I mean, this was what everyone was waiting for.
Yeah.
But I thought it was amazing. And I mean, it sparked off another round of people who were basically racist, saying that he can't play the role. And I'm like, well, you're an idiot and nobody cares about your opinion. But I think it's exciting because, I mean, whilst we'd had, we knew the production was going on, we knew they were filming, we knew they were casting and so on, but getting that visual confirmation of things underway for this project, which has been going on for so long where nobody thought this was going to happen, is just awesome to see, you know, definitively this is in process.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
Yeah.
And yeah, he looked really good. My only thought that I had when I saw it is that he looks really clean. But I don't know, without the context of where the photo, what scene they're filming on the day, you can't really make any kind of determination. But he's such a good actor. I have so much respect for him, and I think he's going to do an amazing job. And he really looked the part.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the thing. I think I mean, the first thing is we've got Nikolai Arcel, or something, however you say his name.
It sounds like you're saying asshole.
Asshole, yeah. I'm sure, Nikolai, I'm sure he's a very nice man. The one thing I knew about him was he apparently did script work on Lars von Trier's Antichrist.
What, do you like that film?
I think I was very reluctant to go anywhere near the film, and then heard a whole bunch of opinions about it from people that I, you know, trust, and I actually think it's very interesting.
I really, really like it.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a really fascinating portrayal of a story, and I think if he had any kind of hand on the crafting of that story, that's a very interesting voice to get telling this, because it's a very non-blockbustery, non-traditional kind of voice, which I think is kind of perfect for this.
Yeah, I agree.
It has that really kind of dark, unsettling edge to it as well. So that was kind of cool. And then from then on, we had Idris Elba cast as Roland. We had Matthew McConaughey cast as the Man in Black, or as Walter. We then had Abby Lee as Tirana, which is interesting because I think everybody was like, who the hell is Tarana? Now, Tarana actually is in the books, which is in the last book.
I have no memory of that character, to be honest.
It's a minor thing. She turns up in the Dixie Peak, and she is one of the – I think she's a Taheen who has a go at Callahan when he turns up. But that's
I was just going to say, I would assume that they're rolling a few characters into her.
Yeah, well, I have a theory about this because it depends on who all these characters are. So we'll get them all out, and then I'll sort of have a go at it. Jackie Earle Haley as Saya, who is in the books, but not necessarily present in the books much. We hear a lot more about him from Callahan than actually seeing him. Mm. Claudia Kim, who was recently in Age of Ultron, I think, who's a South Korean actress, is playing someone called Ara Champion, who again is mentioned somewhere in the series. And she's married to a gunslinger. That's a strange character to have turn up. We have Frank Krantz, who was in Cabin in the Woods, as Pimley Prentice, who again is in the final book, but is in Al Ghul Siento, but is also interestingly a human character who gets pulled into Roland's world. We have Tom Taylor playing Jake. We have Catherine Winnick, who is from, what's that show? Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't yet revealed who she's playing, and she actually put up a photo on set but had her hand over her trailer character name. So they're obviously keeping that a secret for some particular reason.
Maybe she's playing Lady Stoneheart.
Probably, yeah. But we know that she's not playing Susan Delgado because they've actually cast a South African actress called Alex McGregor to play Susan Delgado.
Is she playing Susan Delgado, or was her character name just Susan?
No, it says Susan Delgado.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I'm getting this from the latest rumors going around. But nobody's changed it. Like, that information's remained up for a while and it hasn't been taken down. So, and because she's South African, that also, and they're filming currently in South Africa, that, you know, has the ring of truth around it. So we have a whole bunch of A-list, like absolute A-list actors, plus some character actors from, you know, well-respected, decent films. We have, you know, the two main characters or three main characters. We then have some minor characters from book 7 and from, I guess, Roland's past. And that, you know, gives you an image of perhaps what they might be doing with this. The other kind of facts that we know is we know that they're starting with the first line of the gunslinger that the man in black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed. We know that Stephen King kind of almost had it written into the contract that that had to be how they started. We know they're using, or at least they started with, Akiva Goldsman's script, which was apparently just a hot mess of terrible. But Arcel has reworked it, which is kind of good, and that they're filming currently in South Africa and that they're going to then film in New York. So that's, I guess, a whole level of facts. We then got a whole bunch of other bits and pieces as well. That they, you know, and we heard this in the interview that Stephen King gave the other day, where he talked about that pretty much most of Roland's past, the stuff we get in Wizard and Glass and Wind Through the Keyhole, that they're going to hold that potentially for a miniseries with a younger Roland. We know there's no Eddie or Susanna in this film, so we don't even need to worry about them. And then he made some kind of allusion the other day to Ralph Fiennes, but saying that he wasn't going to be playing the Crimson King, which is interesting because I didn't even know that people thought he was going to. But it also then means that they definitely have somebody in mind for that, or somebody already cast as that character. So based on all of that, I have a few theories.
I would love to hear them.
Okay, well, I've been reading other reports from other people who apparently have already seen versions of the earlier Goldsmith script.
Yeah.
Which is why, there is this sort of reputation that script has for being a lot of terrible. And everyone was really, really worried, and that's kind of fed the sort of cynicism about what's going on with the production. But we also know that it's been reworked. Now, Goldsman's script apparently is the one where there's no Eddie, there's no Susanna. There's basically nothing from drawing at the three. There's little bits from the Gunslinger, but not much, but a lot from the Wastelands. And that it begins with Jake. Apparently the opening scene of that, I think I've actually seen a screenshot of that first page. It's Jake drawing on his pad in class, which I think is actually something that does occur in the book. And in the book, I think he's drawing Blaine. And that then sort of kicks off that whole storyline about his reality becoming fractured and so on. My theory is that it'll begin with him sort of absentmindedly drawing in class, and he either draws a picture of Roland but also writes the line, the first line from the book, without any kind of awareness of what he's doing.
Sorry, that was involuntary. That sounds terrible.
That was a very interesting noise.
Because when Stephen King insists in the contract that the movie has to begin with the man in black fled through the desert, yeah, and the gunslinger followed, to have a kid writing it on a notepad in class is such a disappointment. It needs to be an epic widescreen shot of that thing that they say happening, in my opinion. And they can do that and then flash forward or flashback, but I want that movie to open on that awesome desert moment, Roland trudging through the desert. It'd be awesome.
We might still get that.
I hope so.
I just think we might get it in a different way.
That's not getting it in a different way. That's getting something else.
No. I got a theory, but... So I think that's how it's going to begin. And I think that pretty much the first third of the film is going to be largely Jake. And I think we're going to be aligned with his sort of point of view, which makes sense when you think they're putting this out into the world with an audience who have very little kind of concept of this story. And it is a very bizarre story. And I think it's going to be about him and his reality basically disintegrating as he's unsure what's going on, and he's getting some kind of glimpse into what's happening with Roland, which at this point I think he probably assumes is not real, which is, again, there's a parallel in the book, so that kind of makes sense. I then think it'll lead towards him getting pulled into Roland's world, much as he does in the Wastelands, through the doorway that abandoned house.
Yeah, I read somewhere that somebody confirmed that apparently that does happen.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense, because if you think about his journey, certainly before that moment in the books, he turns up in the Gunslinger and then goes away.
Mm.
And he's not there at all in the Drawing of the Three, except in sort of memories. And then he again turns up in the Wastelands and is pulled back into the world. So he kind of, he turns up and then he goes away and then he turns up again. And there's no sense to have that in the film.
But if my memories of the book serve me correctly, that really informs his character, especially in the Wastelands, knowing that the gunslinger has let him die before, or like not necessarily having a memory of that, but having a feeling of it, really kind of informs his relationship with the gunslinger. And also, if I remember correctly, to draw him, Roland needed Eddie and Susanna. That was kind of integral to being able to draw him through the doorway.
Yeah. But that's how it is in the books. But I think we can still get away with that, needing them in the film. at this stage. And yeah. I think aligning us with Jake is necessary to gradually step the audience into the world. Otherwise, it just makes no sense.
Yeah, I just worry that some of this stuff is like the importance of the quartet isn't being addressed, perhaps. But you know, again, not seeing it, it's hard to judge. But
yeah.
It's hard to imagine how Eddie and Susanna could be important in later films if they're not here for this really integral moment.
Well, yeah, I think we will be able to find a way to get them in because. Yeah, again, it'll all make sense once I kind of got through what I'm thinking.
Cool. Keep going.
Yeah, I think the stakes will be raised with him needing to get pulled through into Roland's world because he's going to be then pursued through New York by the Taheen, by the low men and so on, because we have then the casting of Saya and of Tarana and so on, which are characters from, you know, they turn up in the Dixie Pig back in book 7. I don't know, that seems to make sense to me based on the casting and based on the rumors about the story, that that's the sort of journey at the beginning of it. And then he'll get pulled in. And then I think when he arrives in Roland's story, it may be at a point where we're seeing sort of the fall of Gilead kind of thing. Based on then again, these characters from, I guess Roland's past, who aren't present in the story, being cast. But I don't know. These are all just sort of wild predictions. And that then, I guess, ties Jake into Roland's journey and understanding the need for his journey much stronger than I think might necessarily come across if he just haphazardly turns up there and then spends a good couple of books trying to find a reason why he's there. I just don't think we could do that in a film. And if you think about the sort of forward momentum in The Gunslinger and The Drawing of Three really is lacking. Like there's very little sort of overall direction in the story in the main part of, you know, the Dark Tower narrative until we really get to the Wasteland. Until we're sort of on the road to Lud.
I don't know. I actually disagree with that. I think you're right for Drawing of the Three, but for Gunslinger, because at that stage in the writing process, it was such a simple concept. It had huge forward momentum. He's looking for the Dark Tower. That's it.
Yeah.
And he's heading towards it, and he's chasing the man in black, and at the end he catches up, and that's great. And that
it is. Yeah. It is. But I think if we just played that straight, the audience would not understand the reason for it.
See,
I think at it from Jake's perspective, we get a lot more of it.
So I wouldn't be surprised if it's actually following the structure of The Gunslinger, but bringing in elements from the other books to kind of make a fatter version of The Gunslinger.
Yeah. And because I think another theory that Catherine Winnick was potentially playing Allie. That instead of seeing the fall of Gilead, we might be seeing Tull, and Tull is kind of built up as a much larger event than it is in the book.
Yep.
So that's possible, yeah.
Yeah, and then perhaps Jake is drawn into the world rather than just appearing as he does in The Gunslinger. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's a moment later in the film where he dies and you have that, you know, there are other worlds than these moment, which is a huge moment in the book. And I also wouldn't be surprised, just from like an economic perspective, the fact that we haven't seen any photos of Matthew McConaughey. There's been no word on him being on set or anything, whether he's in it for 10 minutes at the end, which is essentially the role of the man in black in The Gunslinger, where he sits down with Roland and they talk for 10 years. And
That the director and Stephen King have both said that he's actually much more present in the film than he is in the book. In the book, he's kind of off in the distance, but in the film, they said he's there and he's present and involved in the conflict.
But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't mean present necessarily in the he's in each scene kind of sense, or present as in, oh, you can feel the presence of his actions, and whether he's just like somewhere else shooting in front of a green screen and can be dropped into a couple of key places. Because I just imagine McConaughey at the height of the reconnaissance, he would be an expensive person to add into a untested franchise such as this, and I wouldn't be surprised if they've come up with some kind of way to get him on the cheap by getting him to do a little bit here for a little bit, and then if it's successful, he can get like a huge payday next time. But that's just the box office nerd in me being a bit cynical. But.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, based on the way they were saying it, it sounded like they were both really looking forward to seeing what he could do with the character and the presence he could bring to the scenes. So that was kind of the way they were talking about it.
But even if he's only in it for 10 minutes, if it's an amazing performance, he can still bring that, and it can still be great.
They'd said that on the back of saying that his character is much more there, involved, rather than just an object to chase. So... He could be in New York, which may be why we haven't had anything of him yet, that he's more there also involved in, say, following Jake, which also has an equivalent in the books too. Maybe. So it might be that once they move to New York, which is apparently quite soon, we're going to get a lot more of his character. Also, apparently the balance of the story is it's... about 70% New York, 30% Midworld, which again gives you a bit of an idea of how they're focusing the story. Now, whether that's just rumor or whether it's actually borne out in the final product remains to be seen, but that's what they're saying. What was I going to say? Based on Jake dying, I think that it's quite possible he might have these memories of that, of what happens in the books, of him being let go and him dying, and that's his great fear, that's going to happen again. But in this version of it, he doesn't. We have almost the same moment, but then he doesn't.
I see what you're saying. Yes, that's interesting.
That could show, again, that this is charting a different path to what was there.
Yeah, it would be quite a bold move if they referred to events from the books in this and kind of definitively stated this is different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, we don't know. But I think, you know, looking at that casting and looking at the brief bits that we know about the story, it sort of seems to me like they've recognized that the series is very imbalanced. The cohesiveness that's there in Wolves of the Callous, Song of Susanna and The Dark Tower is lacking in the first few books, which makes sense. Like it was written over decades and, you know, in a very stop-start fashion and without necessarily much sense of an overall plan. And it was only after his accident where he sort of sat down and just, you know, wrote those all pretty much consecutively. So it seems like they're trying to take that cohesiveness and then implant it over the early part of the story so that the narrative kind of works a lot better, that it's much more consistent, that the threats and the characters that are present in the ending are anticipated from the beginning.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what they do in terms of the ending and what breakpoint they choose. Because from everything I've heard, they're treating this as pretty much a standalone. And if it's successful, they can look at coming back at some point. But it doesn't seem like there's plans to shoot this as a franchise.
Well, I think they asked Arcel about that, and because they asked him how he'd go about casting Stephen King, and he sort of said, look, that'd be really interesting, but it's not for him to decide. So I think, it will be a... let's see how successful this is, whether they move ahead on it.
Well, given that it's different and given that it's a film, maybe they don't cast Stephen King. Maybe it's Nicolay Arcel who comes in instead.
Maybe. I really hope...
Howard. Oh, my God, please, can it be Ron Howard? That would be hilarious.
I really think they should do it, and I think they should cast Bill Hader because I think he would
be perfect. Nice choice, yes. Yeah,
he did a sketch once on SNL, and he did the most dead-on impression. It was just perfect. But I think he actually has very good acting qualities, and I think he could do it quite well. I mean, my doubts are that I can't imagine how this is going to be critically received by a wide section of the public. It's such a bizarre story that I can't foresee a future where this is going to be embraced by everybody.
And I think that's kind of why what inspired my article that I wrote,
yeah.
My piece, sorry, that I wrote a while ago. It is hard to see how it translates to a wide audience, but if they've made enough changes and it does have that kind of forward momentum and a tighter narrative, you know, it could work. It could cross over, but I haven't heard anything about how much the budget is, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's not massive.
No, and I think that would probably be... the reason why I'm always constantly erring on the side of, optimism towards the production is because they have got, they've got a dead-on cast. You know, all the people they've cast, they're actually really good choices. There's no easy or cheap or, lazy choices going on. These are very thoughtful, accurate casting decisions, and you know, particularly with the two leads, they're big names, and which makes me think, well, they've got to be there for a reason. They wouldn't go for this role and they wouldn't sign up for it if there wasn't some kind of value in the script that they're looking at and the vision for the production.
You know, they get paid, right?
Yeah. But I mean, you look at the roles that particularly Elba and McConaughey are choosing lately. You know, like McConaughey's wasted a lot of his time doing rubbish and he isn't doing that anymore. I think the fact that they've, you know, narrowed in on this and decided that they wanted to commit to it is, you know, an indication that there must be some kind of quality in the story.
I imagine that they're not... Okay, this is bad, but it reminds me of a line from that I remember from one of the early seasons of Entourage, which I only watched when it first started and didn't stick with. But the guy who plays the agent was trying to convince the actor to do like a terrible film, and he didn't want to do it. And he said, "You don't ruin your career by making a bad film. You ruin your career by passing on movies that then later become hits." And so it might be a bit of that. It's like they're going to get a good payday out of it. There's potential, if it does work, that they could be associated with an iconic role. But it's probably a mid-budget film that's launching outside of like the big blockbuster period. If it sinks, nobody's really going to notice, and it's not going to be skin off anybody's nose. So it's kind of an easy gamble. Like they could potentially turn into something bigger, but if they don't, it's fine. Nobody loses. Do you know what I mean? And Elba has for a long time, I think, been looking for a franchise to associate himself with. It might just be a matter of it coming along at the right time. And McConaughey can kind of do what he wants. And, you know, he's been associated with a couple of King projects in the past, including The Stand. So, you know, this is kind of a way for him to test whether it's going to work for him or not.
Well, that's a really – it's an interesting thing that he was involved in discussions for The Stand, which I think is currently on hold because Josh Boone has gone off to do something else. And he was looking at the flag character in The Stand, and that for a while he was contemplating the Roland character for this, but ended up going with Flag. That was apparently what interested him more. He wanted to do that role. There's – the vague possibility that perhaps he's going to play both roles.
It would be so amazing. I would love that to happen.
So, and that perhaps, you know, that there is some kind of design of setting up much more continuity in these adaptations. There's a lot of his books at the moment which are in process, and I wonder if there's some kind of discussion about trying to thread them together.
I would assume that they're all like the rights are all held by different studios, so it would be a massive headache. It would be like trying to get the Fantastic Four in an Avengers movie. It just wouldn't happen.
Don't ruin my conspiracy theory.
I mean, Spider-Man is, you know, in the Avengers now, even though it's owned by Sony. So, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah. I guess if there's one sort of I guess forerunner that might serve as a possible I guess glimpse as to how this could be received if they do turn into a really good film is the success of Mad Max last year. Because again, you're dealing with a story which has a very kind of bizarre singular vision that is different from the mainstream. You're getting a director who is coming from a very different background to what might otherwise be expected for a mainstream film. And it'd be nice if that kind of the success of Mad Max last year is an indication that people are looking for, that audiences are looking for that kind of unique take on a story.
See, I don't know. I think Mad Max is quite unique, given the legacy that it has within cinema, and the fact that a lot of the press around that film was about the master filmmaker making something that was essentially perfect. And I don't know that the Dark Tower will have that hype. It just doesn't have the legacy within cinema to kind of do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, post-apocalyptic stories have been around for ages. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's why I think that they're probably not going to take it as a post-apocalyptic story. They're going to take it more as a story that blurs the lines between fiction and reality, where we start off in the reality and then the fiction becomes kind of real.
I think that might be true of the film, but I think in terms of the marketing, I wouldn't be surprised if that post-apocalyptic side of it is pretty much all that you see in the trailer, because that's what's going to hook people in. Nobody's going to go to see a movie about a boy doodling trains in a book in New York.
Well, look, I mean, they're still talking about now. It's going to be January next year, maybe February, that it comes out.
I think they've locked February as the date now.
Yeah. So we're looking at probably another 5-6 months till we see any kind of trailer. But it's a lot sooner than I was expecting.
Well, just imagine by the time we go to see Star Wars Episode 8, we will have seen the Dark Tower.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Star Wars Episode 8 is really soon.
Yes.
So that's exciting.
It is. I do recall you were quite cynical about the new Star Wars films at one point as well.
I may have published that. But I didn't make a bet, and so it's fine.
No.
But oh, my God, I just remembered. I wrote that article about how everybody should be worried about the new Star Wars, and you wrote a rebuttal.
Yep. And we saw he was correct.
Damn it. Look, I have to take my hat off to you for not holding that over me. You could have been incredibly smug for the last few months, and you haven't been. So, well done.
I might have been in private circles, but no. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, I think we will see who's the one who has the controversial opinion.
Well, I hope that Dark Tower is shit just so that I get to win this one.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I think, you know, we're both hoping that this is going to be good. I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can because I do like to trust them. And I think if we do look at the facts as we see them, there is a lot of good stuff that is happening, a lot of good choices that are being made. Without knowing the script, you know, we'll never know. But
I would say for anybody who's listening and who's worried about Dark Tower, who is feeling a little bit apprehensive, there was a podcast released recently from EW, I think, which you put me onto, Craig, where the director of the film and Stephen King were both interviewed about the direction of the film. And as somebody who was a little bit apprehensive beforehand, I feel a lot more confident. I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah, and they did sort of talk through some of the decisions they were making, and, you know, it does it kind of confirmed and placed into context some of the, like, the casting and some of the other things that we've been hearing as well. So it's, you know, it's still all good for me.
Yeah, I get the impression that the overall aim of this project is to kind of be a test to see whether this can have an audience. And if it does, I imagine that any sequels will go a lot bigger and a lot more kind of into the story than what this appears to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. They're dipping a toe in the water, I think. And, you know, not dissimilar to perhaps what they did with the first X-Men film back in the late 90s, where they, you know, it had a small budget and they were just trying to see if this kind of thing could gain traction with a big enough audience. Hopefully it does.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you kind of have to respect Sony for doing that, because that's not something that studios are doing anymore. They're buying well-established franchises that are instantly recognizable and making $200 million blockbusters out of them. And, you know, nobody's kind of testing this kind of material. So, I think it's generally a very positive thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, did you have anything further to add
as
we're on this topic?
The only thing that popped into my head is not about Dark Tower, but it's about the fact that today is the day that they finally released the second trailer for Star Trek Beyond, which stars Idris Elba. That's the thing.
I've heard the trailer's good.
It is very good. And Idris Elba is clearly depicted as a guy with a rubber mask on, which is, that's my Star Trek. None of this CGI Klingons stuff from the last film. Guy with a rubber mask, that's what I'm talking about.
I only saw Into Darkness once. I might need to check it out again.
It's I wouldn't watch it twice. Because like the first time you watch it, it's like, hey, this is a really entertaining film. And then you watch it again and you're like, oh my God, this is actually quite bad.
The ending was terrible. And the Khan revelation was terrible. But yes. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother topic, and I'm out of my depth on Star Trek. So
well, if you look at my Twitter feed, you'll see the poster that they released as well, because the poster is spectacular for Star Trek, not Dark Tower.
I did have one final thing to add.
Yes.
Just interesting. The tweet that Stephen King put up about the Horn of Eld and that things are different this time and so on came out on the 19th.
Oh, did it?
Yep.
Oh, what a smart ass. That's great.
So, anyway. Make it that what you will.
Very good. Very good.
All right. Well, if there's nothing further, I think it's, I mean, yeah, look, we'll definitely keep an eye on what's going on with this, and I'm sure we're going to just get further and further updates, and particularly as they move to New York, where I think there'll be a lot more scrutiny over what they're doing rather than filming out in the South African wilderness. But we'll just try and stay on top of it as it occurs.
Yeah.
And then next time we're going to be talking about the very old Tim Curry version of Stephen Curry would be terrible.
That'd be amazing.
No, it would be awful. The Tim Curry version of it from the early 90s, and seeing how it stacks up now and how it stacks up perhaps to everybody's memories, because everyone loves Tim Curry in that, and yet the actual story is pretty rubbish the way it's filmed.
Yeah.
But that'll be for next time.
And then after that, we'll also have End of Watch. I think that actually comes out next month. So, depending on how long it takes us to read it, that could be relatively soon as well.
Yeah, and that will, you know, round out that trilogy and give us something to look at.
Yeah. Has he actually announced a book after End of Watch? I haven't heard anything.
I have a vague feeling that yes, but I can't recall off the top of my head.
Cool.
Yeah, and I have a feeling, and I would not be surprised if we get another Dark Tower book on the Battle of Jericho.
That would be that would be awesome.
He said that that's the one thing he still feels he needs to write. So
yes,
I wouldn't be surprised if that comes out and is a buffer for the film.
That'd be cool.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. Definitely. I'm on board with that.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Mm.
All right. Well, until then.
Awesome.
It's been good.
Thank the listeners.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, the listeners. Thanks all the listeners who are listening to us talking about the Dark Tower.
Have you even looked at our analytics? I haven't. I have no idea.
I wouldn't even know how to access them.
We could be a massive smash hit and we wouldn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But thanks for listening to everybody. And we'll hopefully be back in a week or two. And we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening.